You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your source for news and information.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how a green soy extract could prevent cognitive dysfunction from the University of Shizuoka in Japan. We're also going to talk about what vitamins and nutrients will help prevent glaucoma from worsening from the Glaucoma Research Foundation. And also today, breast milk does what a vaccine could never do. And I'll get into that in some depth, plus a lot more on health and healing. And from our environmental segment today, a commentary from one of the great minds on this planet, from The Guardian, George Monbiot, on disposable planet. Then some commentaries on different topics today, including I'm going to play you a few moments of a conversation or a rant by Keith Overman. Keith is capable of doing some extraordinarily competent, insightful, and searing commentaries. I've listened to many. I've appreciated them. This is about Donald Trump, and I'll play a few minutes of it. I could find no fault in his arguments against Trump, but the fault lies in he could easily have done the same commentary, but far more devastating, on Hillary and Bill Clinton. Why not? So I'm going to give you not 160 different reasons not to like Donald Trump. I'll give you one concerning Hillary Clinton. Not something that she might do, but something she has done, just one. And then I'll ask you to respond to it. It'll be from Daniel Larson from the American Conservative. It's "The Horrifying Starvation of Yemen Continues." I'll tie all that together. We're going to have an interesting discussion with a guest, Anthony Samsel. He's an independent scientist, a researcher on public health, and we're going to talk about Monsanto's Roundup is found in most vaccines. Well, how did that happen? What are their risks? Why aren't we finding out about it? Why is it no one in the pharmaceutical industry or the government, the CDC, the FDA, or the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, why did none of them tell us about it? What does it mean at parts per billion? So we'll discuss that in depth. This will be an exclusive interview. So you're going to hear 176 shocking things Donald Trump has done, but only about 3 or 4 minutes. Also today, I'll continue with our discussion of the deep state. These are the individuals who are extraordinarily powerful. Some are household names, like the Rockefellers. And being the Rockefellers in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with that. There are many descendants of the Rockefeller family who have done very noble things. They're very conscientious. Just like Stuart Mott was very conscientious of what he did on social, environmental, and human rights issues as one of the top heirs to a major automobile fortune. But it's the corporations that these entities control and what they do to maintain their control. Today, you'll hear from John Perkins. He was an economic hitman. First person story about how he would go in to a country where we wanted something. A corporation wanted something. A deep state corporation connected wanted something. And if they didn't get what they wanted, the deep state would apply pressure, including assassination. We'll discuss that. So you see, we have a lot to share today, so we begin. Glaucoma is a big issue. A lot of people have it. And think of all the people, if you were a baby boomer like me growing up, where you watched the adults, they'd be smoking nonstop, and they'd always kind of squint like their eyes were burning. Well, it was because their eyes were burning. And then if they were drinkers, and most were, you notice the enlarged pores all around their face. So if they smoke and drank, which most did, then they had really ruddy complexions. They didn't look good. And that's on the outside. On the inside, it got a lot worse. But anything that's causing inflammation on your skin is certainly going to cause it in your eyes. So all that smoking, either direct or secondhand, impacted eyes because of oxidative stress. So what are one of the solutions? Well, according to the Glaucoma Research Foundation, something very basic. Nutrient-rich fruits and vegetables in a healthy diet. And then also exercise as well. Quote from their report. Color greens, cabbage, kale, spinach, Brussels sprouts, celery, carrots, peaches, radishes, green beans, and beets. These are all rich, along with dark chocolate and green tea and bilberry. In lycopene, and lycopene, along with vitamin C, B complex, D and E, minerals, calcium, and zinc, are all good for your eye health, help prevent glaucoma. Well, that was seamless, easy. From the University of Shizuoka in Japan, published in the Journal of Functional Foods. What does that mean? A functional food is it carries out a function in your body. For example, if you had an irritated colon, maybe you had diverticulitis or cellulitis, I would probably suggest that you use aloe vera, whole of aloe vera, because the mucopolysaccharides, the healing ingredient in that aloe, can heal the intestine, turn off inflammation, and frequently help people with everything from ulcers, either gastric ulcers in the stomach or duodenal ulcers, and also help you calm down the intestine. So functional foods carry on function in the body. Dark cherries, tart cherries, the Montmorency cherries, help turn off pain in the joints, for example. So the intake of green soybean extract could help reverse cognitive dysfunction and its associated accumulated beta-amyloid proteins, according to the study. So you can get concentrated green soy extract in any health food store. And if you have any form of brain dysfunction, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia, memory loss, you don't want those beta amyloid building up in the brain. So you want genistein, daisine, the ginstein. These are the nutrients in soy, non-genetically engineered soy, that can make a difference. Suggested usage once a day. There's a big push now to make vaccine mandatory with no exemptions at all, religious or any other reason. And now they're starting a whole program to try to get adults to have adult vaccination. But why don't we stop for a moment and just think about what is the best vaccine of all? It's breast milk. Now, according to PreventDisease.com, to claim that breast milk is the gold standard in infant nutrition is an understatement. Quote, for a newborn, nothing comes close in nutrient density, which is so perfectly customized for an infant as it grows. Breastfed infants gain incredible protection from antibodies, proteins, and immune cells in breast milk. It defends against a myriad of pathogens in ways that are impossible through vaccination and other pharmaceuticals. How so? How does all this work? Well, it's relatively simple. Now, almost all women who are expecting know this because this is part of just what your nurse midwife or on your own, you study and you learn. You know, the best way of eating, the nutrients that developing fetus needs, the kind of music, the kind of emotional balance. This is all very good today. We've made major strides, but the average guy, not so much. He's not into understanding what goes on inside of the body. So I'll give you a little, just give you a little overview. The molecules in breast milk cells help to prevent microorganisms from penetrating the body's tissues. And some of the molecules bind to microbes in the hollow space, that's the lumen of the gastrointestinal tract. And in this way, they block microbes from attaching to and crossing through the mucus, the layer of cells, the mucosa, also known as the epithelium. You hear me talk all the time about the epithelium that lines the digestive tract, lines your arteries and your veins and other body cavities. Now, other molecules lessen the supply of particular minerals and vitamins that harmful bacteria need to survive in the digestive tract. And certain immune cells in human milk are phagocytes that attack microbes directly. And another set produces chemicals that invigorate the infant's own immune response. These are called breast milk antibodies. Now, naturally occurring sugars found in the mother's breast milk provide protection against life-threatening bacteria by attaching and then attacking these in the body and then supplying friendly bacteria in the baby's intestine. Researchers have identified a specific sugar. This is a lacto-N-difucohexose. And in breast milk, that proved better at killing the bacterium Staphylococcus than breast milk without the sugar. So antibodies, which are also called immunoglobulins, take five basic forms, IgG, IgA, IgM, IgD, and IgE. All have been found in human milk. But by far the most abundant type is IgA, specifically the form known as a secretory IgA, which is found in great amounts throughout the gut and your respiratory system of adults. And these antibodies consist of two joined IgA molecules in the so-called secretory component that seems to shield the antibody molecules from being degraded. But in lay language, I'll just break it down even simpler. Every time the baby breastfeeds, it's getting good bacteria into its gut and protecting it from bad bacteria. It's getting the good minerals, the right amount of protein, everything that the baby needs to develop is getting. That's why mothers should not give glucose bottle solutions to their babies. Very harmful. Now, researchers from the University of North Carolina School of Medicine explored this paradox, demonstrating that breast milk has a strong virus-killing effect that protects against oral transmission of HIV. There was a study, vaccine versus breast milk, and vaccines inhibit the growth of essential immune cells early in life. And avoiding vaccines could actually improve an infant's response to infection. More specifically, vaccines suppress very specific types of proteins found in breast milk, which inhibit growth of specific cancers. Here's from the study, quote, "What happens at an early age is that natural killer cells, like many other immune cells, do not complete their functional maturation until adulthood. And during this time, we are left with an immature immune system that cannot protect us against infections, the reason why newborns and infants are more prone to infection." And so vaccines promote and extend the immature immune system of infants, meaning they actually harm the immune system of the developing baby. And this not only is accomplished by interfering with DNA, but introducing heavy metals like aluminum and mercury and other toxic preservatives found in vaccines. So there's a large gap in understanding infant immunity, specifically why the natural killer cell responses are deficient. So breast milk, you're getting everything the child needs. Vaccines, nothing the child needs. And also, from Ruhr University in Germany, a challenge to psychotropic drugs. Here's what it says. A mental disorder can be treated with drugs rapidly. However, the effects of such a therapy are controversial. Many patients suffering from mental illness are treated with psychotropic drugs rather than psychotherapy. By the way, just as an aside, I am an absolute supporter of any form of constructed humanistic psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, psychotherapy, any form of talk therapy. And I used to, one of my good friends was Donald Mullen, Dr. Donald Mullen, over at the Albert Ellis Center. And Ellis, who lived a long life, very productive, believed in psychotherapy. Dr. Elaine Kahn, who passed last year from Alzheimer's, also big believer in being able to talk with someone. Drugs? No. So what we see is, quote, currently the available drugs cannot permanently alleviate the symptoms of mental disorders. This is the conclusion drawn by psychologists Dr. Margaret Margraf and Professor Schneider from Rohr University and published in EMBO Molecular Medicine. They compiled ample evidence suggesting, quote, that antidepressant, anti-anxiety, and anti-ADHD drugs have only a short-term effect. If patients discontinue treatment, their symptoms return. The authors suspect that medication for the treatment of schizophrenia would yield similar results. Quote, long-term application of the drugs might even have negative effect. For example, increased risk of chronic illness and higher relapse quota. So when you're giving the drugs, you're not doing the psychotherapy. It's not available. Quote, according to the authors, psychotherapies such as cognitive behavioral therapy yield much better and more sustainable results in the long term. The main problem with psychotherapy is psychotherapy is not its effectiveness or cost, rather it is insufficiently available, which in lay language means they're just not giving it. They give you a prescription and out the door you go. So they're saying this stuff doesn't work and has harmful side effects, and whatever seems to be working, it's just very short term. And finally, from University of Leuven in Belgium, eating your greens could enhance your sports performance. Nitrate supplementation in conjunction with sprint interval training in low oxygen conditions, that's where you're at sea level, or higher than sea level, could enhance sports performance. So you already know that because I've been suggesting that you try either green vegetable juice, that's giving you the nitrate, or beet juice, which gives you a lot of nitrate. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Frontiers in Physiology. So take your beet juice and get a better exercise. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. From all over the world and all the other stations that are carrying this program, we thank you and we welcome you. I select the topics each day, and we have scholars in residence that do the in-depth research. I do about 6 hours of research myself each day to try to get you information to this cutting edge. We do not trust the American media. You cannot trust the American media. And not today, but on an upcoming program, I'm going to play you clips from about 40 different major network and cable stations and show you they're all covering the same identical stories using the same identical words, which shows that someone in one place wrote the script and everyone's doing it. Well, that's not journalism. And we try to give you the truth of what is needed. By the way, we want to thank the people. We set a new record for the most people listening live over the internet, listening live over telephones, and then downloading it. of any show that we've ever done on 9/11, the 7-hour special. It's there. With this, I'm going to give you another number now. I keep giving you new numbers to listen live. Save all of them. Why? Because our audience is expanding at such an exponential rate that there may not be room on a bandwidth one day when you call in. But if you have another number, you can call that number and get on. Also, I'm going to give you a number to go right to our archives at any time, 24/7. Select the program you want to listen to and listen over any portable listening device. I was just in an airport because I've been traveling. I'm due back in about a week and into New York. I finished up almost everything I have to do. And this guy comes over and he says, "Hey," he said, "I just watched you over in Atlanta." I said, "Yeah, I do a lot of shows down there." He said, "I'm a truck driver." He said, "I have long routes." And he said, "I go to your archives." And he said, "For hours on end, I listen to these programs because they're so informative." Well, thank you. Here are the two numbers you need to listen live over any portable device, noon to 1, Monday to Friday. Write down, this is a new number. Don't take away the other numbers. Add it to it. 605-475-5151. 605-475-5151. And if you want to go to our archives and download any program, here's the number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Now, Keith Olbermann is an extraordinarily bright person. Some people may or may not like his demeanor and his personality, but I set that aside. I've enjoyed his commentaries over the years that I've heard them. And now he's back with, I think it's a Gentleman's Quarterly. I didn't even know they had a television program, but he's there doing commentaries. Good for him. The problem is I consider what he didn't say. He went after Trump. Why doesn't he go after Hillary Clinton in the same way? Here's what he has to say. We'll just play a few minutes of this, and I'm going to give you a challenge on looking into Hillary Clinton's background. Please listen in.
Every few generations, we Americans are called upon to defend our country, to defend it not so much from foreign dictators or war or terrorism, but from those here who have no commitment to progress or democracy or representative government, no commitment to anything except their own out-of-control minds and the bottomless pits of their egos. Our society has thrown up these people before. Joseph McCarthy, George Wallace, Father Coughlin, Jefferson Davis, Aaron Burr, the Know-Nothings, the Blacklisters, the America Firsters, and we have always thrown them out. And now our generation has its own, the most dangerous individual ever nominated by a major party for the highest office in this country. His base wants few details and fewer facts. They just want to burn it down and blame their failures on the collective other. And Donald John Trump is their demonic messiah in Oompa Loompa's clothing. We must stop him. It is not pleasant. It is not fair that we have to do this, but it is our turn. The average report in this series will ask for about 6 minutes of your time. This one needs nearly three times as much. The text version includes more than 160 links. I encourage you to read and save, because the emperor's new clothes quality to the Trump campaign has survived these 15 months, because as we react to each outrage, our shock and revulsion has been refracted like light through a prism. But these outrages are not separate events, not even a pattern. They are simply Donald Trump. Seen all at once, they and he are horrifying, and you must see them all at once. Thus, in brief, the story so far. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who attacked the Pope, who attacked John McCain for being captured by the North Vietnamese, who attacked Gold Star parents, Khazir and Ghazala Khan, and then juxtaposed their names with the phrase radical Islamic terrorism, who attacked Hillary Clinton as a, quote, bigot, who attacked her as brainwashed, as unhinged, as a monster, as the devil, as the most corrupt candidate ever, showing her face on piles of $100 bills and the Star of David, who attacked her as someone who Second Amendment people should do something about, as someone whose religion we don't know anything about, after he had explained he had never asked God for forgiveness, who attacked President Obama and implied he was a traitor, who attacked him as having been complicit in the Orlando terrorist attack, who attacked him for having lower approval ratings than Vladimir Putin, as if Putin's approval ratings could somehow be trusted, who attacked him as being born in another country, who attacked him as the founder of ISIS, then said that was sarcasm, then said it wasn't sarcasm, then attacked him again as the founder of ISIS, who attacked Carly Fiorina for her face, Hillary Clinton for her non-presidential look, Heidi Cruz for her appearance, Megyn Kelly for having blood coming out of her wherever, Mika Brzezinski as crazy and very dumb, neurotic, not very bright, who attacked the women who accused Roger Ailes of harassment, who attacked the women who choose abortion, and who said there should be punishments, who attacked a New York Times reporter because he had a condition that made his arms look atypical, who attacked Judge Gonzalo Curiel because he was of Mexican descent, who attacked Senator Elizabeth Warren over allegedly lying over her heritage to get into Harvard when she never went to Harvard, who attacked Senator Jeff Flake by saying he will not be reelected this year when Senator Flake is not up for reelection until 2018. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who attacked U.S. troops in Iraq and claimed they stole millions, who has attacked Ted Cruz's father and claimed he was connected to the assassination of President Kennedy, attacked Bill Clinton and claimed he was a rapist, who attacked Mexicans as rapists, bringing drugs and crime, who attacked African Americans and claimed they were all living in poverty with no jobs and schools that were no good, who attacked Harrisburg, Pennsylvania as a war zone, and attacked the United States of America and claimed it is in a, quote, death spiral. The Republican Party has actually nominated for president a man who lied about opposing the war in Iraq when there is a tape of him supporting it, a tape recorded on the first anniversary of 9/11, who lied about opposing the war in Iraq during a speech in which he insisted, "I will never lie to you," who lied about $6 million in charitable donations to veterans groups from his telethon, who lied about donating his profits from The Apprentice, about charitable donations from The Celebrity Apprentice, from Trump the Game, and to St. Jude Cancer Center, who lied about a plan to debate Bernie Sanders for charity, who lied about why he would not release his taxes because he was being audited, and then proved himself a liar by saying he would release his taxes if Secretary Clinton released emails, who lied about how much money his father gave him, helping him to get out of college, who lied about sending his private jet to ferry stranded U.S. servicemen, who lied about talking to the Attorney General of Florida, who declined to investigate Trump University after she had been given a campaign donation, who lied about his business in Russia, who lied about meeting Russian President Putin, who lied about offering child care to his employees when it was child care for his hotel guests, who lied about some people wanting a moment of silence for the murderer of 5 Dallas policemen, who lied about seeing thousands of Muslims in New Jersey celebrating 9/11, who lied about 9/11 hijackers sending their wives and girlfriends home to Saudi Arabia, who lied about thousands of Syrian refugee terrorists being secretly admitted to this country, who lied about the Chicago police urging him to cancel a rally, who lied about the Chicago police saying they could solve crime there with tough police tactics, who lied about how there was no drought in California, how he never said Japan should have nuclear weapons, how he opposed the ouster of Egyptian President Mubarak, how the unemployment rate is 42%. Who lied about ISIS making millions a week in selling Libyan oil, who lied about dozens of secret terrorist cases in this country, who lied that a protester who tried to rush onto his stage had ties to ISIS, who lied last May and again last week about refugees entering this country carrying cell phones with ISIS flags on them and phone plans prepaid by ISIS. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. You don't have to scream. I know that that's part of your persona. And indeed, Keith, I can take no issue with any of the statements you've just made. And I could add more to those as well. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. Now, here's the question. This shows him to be a liar. This shows him not to be a person that we can trust. This shows a narcissist. It shows, in my opinion, an emotionally immature person who needs to, well, you know, if they treat me nice, I'll treat them nice, but if they treat me bad, I'll treat them bad. A bully. We all see that. But why aren't you giving the same introspection with the same intention to Hillary Clinton, I'm going to play you just a very short clip of just a few of the hundreds of actual things that Clinton has said that show that she is no better than Donald Trump when it comes to veracity and quality of character. Please listen.
When you run for president, you need to be judged by what you have done. And I think the evidence is pretty clear.
Oh, it is clear, Mrs. Clinton. So let's take a trip back and look at what you've done. She's a compulsive liar.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles.
I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email.
Secretary Clinton said there was nothing marked classified on her emails, either sent or received. Was that true?
That's not true.
Secretary Clinton said I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. Was that true?
Now, there was classified material emailed.
Well, have you always told the truth?
I've always tried to. Always. Always.
Jimmy Carter said, I will never lie to you.
You know, you're asking me to say, have I ever? I don't believe I ever have. I don't believe I ever have. I don't believe I ever will.
She suppressed rape victims of Bill Clinton.
She was just holding on to my hand. She didn't, because I had started to turn away from her. And she held on to my hand and she said, do you understand everything that you do? I mean, cold chills went up my spine. That's the first time I became afraid of that woman.
Do you interpret that to mean she knew about the incident?
I certainly do. I think she's always known. I think she's always covered up for him.
What Mr. Clinton did to me was wrong.
And she knew what her husband did to those women. There's no way that she did not know that. They're just not truthful people. And it's just, it's been a history of knowing that they're not truthful people. I don't know for sure what she wants to run for, unless it's just an ego thing.
Defended a child rapist.
Took a lot of different tests. I had this Congress, which he passed, which forever destroyed my faith in college.
How did it turn out?
He played bargain. He got him off. It was time served in the county jail. He'd been in the county jail about 2 months.
Flip-flops on major issues.
I have been very consistent over the course of my entire life. I have always fought for the same values and principles, but
I believe that marriage is not just a bond, but a sacred bond between a man and a woman.
Do you think New York State should recognize gay marriage?
No.
No. Okay.
I support marriage for lesbian and gay couples.
We've got to do several things, and I am, you know, adamantly against illegal immigrants. I made this exception basically on humanitarian grounds because of the individual stories, but certainly we've got to do more at our borders, and people have to stop employing illegal immigrants.
Well, look, I voted numerous times when I was a senator to spend money to build a barrier to try to prevent illegal immigrants from coming in.
Instead of building walls, we need to be tearing down barriers.
We're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business.
We're going to do a lot more on carbon capture and sequestration, try to see how we can get coal to be a fuel that can be continued to be sold and continue to be mined.
I take a backseat to no one when you look at my record and standing up and fighting for progressive values.
You know, I get accused of being kind of moderate and center. I plead guilty.
And yet,
I support the Second Amendment.
Yes, she supports it, then she doesn't. Virtually every major issue, she has taken both positions. She is anti-environmentalist. Why? Because it's simple. Look at the individuals that give her money. The major corporations that pollute, like the Koch brothers. But what you could really put a lot of energy into is what her actions have done to actually impact people around the world. For example, she was the one responsible for putting Madeleine Albright in a position of saying, yes, we support that it's acceptable for 500,000 children to die because of Bill and Hillary Clinton's sanctions in Iraq. She's never apologized for that. having half a million children die and you don't feel any responsibility? For all the millions of people who've been displaced and the tens of thousands dead in what was the Paris of Africa, in Libya, no responsibility. When she saw that Gaddafi had been sodomized and brutalized and killed, she cackled and laughed. What kind of personality does that? And here is the latest. This is from Daniel Larrison from the American Conservative. Quote, much of the civilian population of Yemen is being starved to death. And a boy lies on a hospital bed in Yemen, in their port city. His eyes are full of life, but his skinny body tells another story. His arm is so thin that he can wrap his lips around it. His ribs stick out under his skin. He is one of 1.5 million children in Yemen who are suffering from malnutrition. The scale of severity of Yemen's humanitarian crisis is staggering and will continue to worsen unless the situation changes dramatically. Not only are the lives of millions of people at risk of being lost right now, but the future development and health of an entire generation are being destroyed as well. Even if the immediate crisis is addressed with an end to the blockade and massive infusion of aid, Yemen will be living with the destructive effect of this interventional debacle for decades. And who's behind all this? Well, Saudi Arabia and the other Arab allies of Saudi Arabia, including the United Arab Emirates, and Qatar, and Kuwait. But most importantly, as Secretary of State, she could have stopped this. She chose not to. Instead, there's an actual recording of her and her staff celebrating on Christmas Eve the largest purchase of arms from Saudi Arabia, the very munitions that are destroying hospitals and clinics and schools and waterworks and electric plants in Yemen, the poorest country in the Middle East, was under Hillary Clinton. So we have enabled Saudi Arabia to create this starvation, this kid in this bed. Our fingerprints are all over it, as is Great Britain and David Cameron. And that's also true for what has happened in Syria. We're behind that. It was Hillary Clinton. So with the kind of intellect, which is formidable, that Keith Olbermann has, why couldn't you use it to expose the actual interference in a country that was democratically electing a president in Honduras and fomenting a coup for regime change, in Russia, in Ukraine, fomenting a coup in a democratically elected, corrupt, yes, but democratically elected government, and then making an artificial World War III against Russia, in Syria, that was the breadbasket of the Middle East and had a very secular society that did not have bias against any religion. You could practice any religion you wanted to in Syria, where they had a high level of advancement for women and women's rights and the professionals. And the literacy rate in Syria was higher than that in the United States per population. And now look at it. And it's Hillary Clinton. So you see, if you're asking to condemn one, yes, do so. And you're right in doing that. But not to condemn the other then means that you have not been honest about your own ideological or political biases, which is your right to have. But in the future, to be taken seriously, then look at everyone who has dirty hands, and they all do, except for Jill Stein. I'm Gary Nall. I'm on the road, so if the technical quality of our program today is not as good as it should be, please understand when you're not in a studio, you won't have quite the same quality. Now, before we go to a break in my guest, I wanted to share something. I'll save the Perkins piece for our next program. I want to share some insights from George Monbiot called The Disposable Planet in the latest writings he does. This was published in The Guardian. The world's largest land animal, the biggest fish, the bird with the greatest wingspan, the largest primate, all are sliding towards extinction at an astounding speed. We will not protect such magnificent species, and we are not prepared to do so. In just 7 years, 30% of Africa's savanna elephants have been wiped out. The other African subspecies, the forest elephant, has crashed by more than 60% since 2002. Even with this month's resolution to ban domestic sales of elephant tusks, will it make a difference? Possibly, but governments have done so little to restrain the international trade that illegal ivory and other wildlife parts are still sold on the surface web rather than the dark web. Last month, the whale shark was classified as endangered. Some are still hunted deliberately for their meat and fins, and it seems that the revolting practice of live finning, slicing them off, then dumping the shark overboard to die slowly continues. Most are killed at bycatch in nets used to catch other species, especially tuna. Some fishing boats use whale sharks as markers. Why? Because tuna tend to congregate beneath their large bodies and deliberately catch their nets around them. Their decline, the whale shark numbers have halved in the last 75 years. Since 1996, the fish catch has fallen by 1 million tons a year as stocks are exhausted. Sieving the seas for what remains, fishing fleets will trigger the collapse of the entire ocean ecosystem. Fishing also accounts for what has happened to the bird with the largest wingspan, the wandering albatross, whose population has fallen around 30% in just 11 years. Again, the tuna fishery is the principal threat, in this case through the use of baited long lines. Albatrosses dive for the bait, get hooked, and drown. Another cause is their junk food diet. The plastic they eat ends up being regurgitated and given to their chicks. The photographs taken by Chris Jordan on Midway Atoll of the albatross corpses rotting away to reveal the rubbish they contain are a synopsis of our treatment of the living world. However far we travel, our impacts precede us. A week ago, the status of the eastern gorilla, the world's largest primate, was changed from endangered to critically endangered. It has declined by 70% in 20 years. Its habitat in Central Africa has been ripped apart by logging, mining, and farming, and the gorillas are hunted for meat. As they shared 98% of our DNA, this is not far from cannibalism. All the great apes are now either endangered or critically endangered, in the case of the orangutans, largely as a result of producing palm oil. What does it say about us that we are prepared to drive our closest relatives towards extinction? The great acceleration towards a bear gray world is also reflected in this week's State of the Nature report, which shows that more than 10% of the remaining species in the United Kingdom are now threatened with extinction. Last week, we learned that one-tenth of the world's wild places, forests, savannas, and other lands in which human impacts are not obvious, have been lost, dwindled over the past 25 years. The trajectory suggests that there could be almost nowhere left by the end of the century. These should be among the central issues of our age. Yet we treat these losses as sad but peripheral, though we commission them through the things we buy: elephants, rhinos, lions, polar bears, the great sharks, turtles, condors, whales, rainforests, wetlands, coral reefs. They are all the bycatch of consumerism. We assert both the right to consume whatever we want, however we want, and the right to forget the consequences. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. We're now going to Deerfield, New Hampshire. We're standing by as Anthony Samsel, S-A-M-S-E-L. He is an independent research scientist concerned with public health. In the past, he was a research chemist for Arthur D. Little and also the US EPA. In recent years, Anthony has focused his independent research into the adverse risk effects on agriculture of the chemicals that are used, particularly Monsanto's glyphosate, or Roundup, and publishing his findings in collaboration with Dr. Stephanie Seneff at MIT, and the relationship between cancer and other diseases and these chemicals. Nice to have you with us today.
Nice to be on your show again, Gary.
There is a recent press release by Moms Across America that is now making its way through internet platforms that confirms independently that Monsanto's glyphosate, or Roundup, was found in the samples of vaccines given to an independent lab in Missouri. You've already been on this path to determine the presence of Roundup, now being shown to be a carcinogen even by the World Health Organization for a while now. So to help our listeners better understand this discovery, including how can it be the case that an herbicide used in agriculture and as a weed killer winds up in a vaccine manufacturing process that's supposed to be fairly sterile, there are three areas that I'd like for you to evolve your thoughts. First of all, the implications of glyphosate, which is a synthetic amino acid, which does what once it gets into the body? And secondly, I'd like you to talk about how did it get into the vaccines in the first place? The average person believes that vaccines are sterile and free of unwanted chemical contaminants. And the last is, how much is in vaccines, and is it enough to make a difference to cause adverse effects? In fact, especially to children who are receiving almost three dozen vaccines by the age of five. Take your time. Share your insights.
I just want to clear up one item first. The story about vaccines in my research has nothing to do with Moms Across America. I try to keep science separate from activists. Activists pick up our research and they spread it, and that's how it should be. My research was done independently, and the story about vaccines broke on August 18th, following a letter that I sent to United States Senator Jean Shaheen in Washington, D.C., asking that she alert the CDC, the Food and Drug Administration, the National Institute of Health, as well as the United Nations World Health Organization of the Americas. I also sent letters out to various state departments of public health, which included New Hampshire Department of Public Health, California Department of Public Health, some folks in Texas, and a few other places. The contamination of vaccines occurs through bioaccumulation up the food chain. It's glyphosate is passed up the food chain. Basically, animals, whether it, whether they're pigs, cattle, or chickens, or goats, whatever, eat contaminated grain or forage that's contaminated with the herbicide glyphosate. Glyphosate is a synthetic amino acid and analog of our amino acid glycine. Glyphosate misincorporates into biology, becoming part of proteins, particularly structural proteins of collagen, laminin, fibronectin, and elastin, the connective tissues of our being is constructed of those proteins. Glycine is one of our 20 amino acids. It's a non-canonical amino acid. In other words, it's a non-coding amino acid, as opposed to amino acids that code for DNA. The 20 amino acids make up all of our cells and all life on the planet. Our RNA selects these amino acids to construct proteins. Well, glycine is about 25%, 23 to 28% the amino acids in our biology. And glyphosate, being an analog, can substitute for glycine if we ingest it. So this is how glyphosate is getting into our biology, through animals. Now, how does glyphosate get into vaccines? Well, there are various animal proteins that are used in the production of vaccines, whether it's the use of eggs for growing gelatins, or not gelatins, the eggs used for growing the virus, or some of the animal proteins like gelatin that are added to vaccines as an excipient or a suspension aid to stabilize the product. Another animal product that's added to vaccines is bovine serum. Fetal bovine serum is derived from calves, from the blood of calves. Now, these animals have been fed at confined animal feeding operations. They've been fed genetically engineered grain or forage that's been treated with glyphosate herbicide or glufosinate herbicide. Well, these chemicals get into the bloodstream, and so the blood becomes contaminated. So when the pharmaceutical companies use bovine serum, they can contaminate the vaccines. When they use gelatin as an excipient, they can contaminate the vaccines. When they use eggs, they can contaminate the vaccines. Now, back last year, I started analyzing more of our food supply and confirming a lot of Monsanto's original studies where they tracked glyphosate through the biology of animals as well as all the different plants in the food supply that they use it on. And I decided to look at vaccines because of gelatin. I had analyzed gelatins like Jell-O and also Knox gelatin, animal bones that contain collagen. That's where we get gelatin from. I also analyzed vitamins like the gummy vitamins that use gelatin. I found all those things contaminated. So the next logical progression was to look at vaccines because in some vaccines they use up to 12% or more of gelatin as an excipient. So I sent vaccines to three different laboratories. I got some pretty astonishing results. I looked at vaccines from Merck, from Sanofi Pasteur, from Smith GlaxoKline. I looked at vaccines from Wyeth and Novartis. And the vaccines that I looked at in particular had similar things in common. They either used egg proteins to grow the virus, or gelatins to grow the virus on, or added gelatins, or added calf serum to the formulations. And the results that I got showed that virtually all of those vaccines were contaminated. And I can tell you briefly, looking at my lab data, the Merck pneumonovax vaccine was not contaminated. It didn't use gelatin.
Okay, Anthony, we're coming up to the end of the program. My biggest concern now is at what percentage, I know it's parts per billion, like 1 to 3 parts per billion, most people would assume that's a small amount, too small to be dangerous, and yet they don't understand how toxic that is. Finally, tell us how serious it is to have that contamination in any vaccine.
Okay, like in the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine from Merck, the MMR2, there was 3.740 parts per billion. In for each part per billion of glyphosate, there are 3.5 trillion molecules of glyphosate. 3.5 trillion molecules of glyphosate in one part per billion. So you can do the math. Just multiply it times 3.7, and that's how many trillion molecules there are in that MMR vaccine. The same goes for the Zostavax vaccine, which was contaminated, Varivax, the Procord MMR, the hepatitis B vaccine. Anthony,
I need you to be very specific. Do you feel, based upon your knowledge as a scientist and researcher, as well as the input from Dr. Stephanie Seneff at MIT, that that's enough contamination to cause autism or any other damage within the body that's receiving that vaccine?
Yes.
Okay,
unequivocally, yes. It only takes a molecule to corrupt the protein.
And they're getting as many as 36 different vaccines, and the majority of those vaccines could all themselves be contaminated with the herbicide. That means that they have a high expectation, if they're dangerous, that they could end up with some adverse effects, including what we're now calling autism spectrum disorder or some other brain dysfunction.
Yes, I before I started writing the series of papers with Stephanie on glyphosate and modern diseases, I had made the associative links with autism and autism spectrum disorder diseases, as well as chronic kidney disease and a host of other things. And I alerted the CDC, NIH, the EPA, the USDA, and the Food and Drug Administration. And I sent letters through U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen. This was back about four years ago.
People had known about it, but they did nothing about it.
They did nothing about it.
Okay, well, now you've given us some very important and new information. So now, for those of us who are challenging the safety and efficacy of mandatory vaccinations, we should bring a lawsuit, a class action lawsuit, against all the manufacturers and against the government for covering this information up, because they would have been aware of it. And if not, then they're just grossly incompetent. That's a separate issue. So we can stop this until this can be fully adjudicated by independent scientists. You did this, and I want to thank you, Anthony Samsell, and I want to thank Dr. Stephanie Seneff, S-E-N-E-F-F at MIT, for bringing this to our attention. We appreciate it.
You're most welcome.
I'm Gary Nall. That's our program today. We will do more on the Monsanto's Roundup and vaccines on an upcoming program. But that's it for today. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.